Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Swami Devan Bhaskar. Bhaskar took sannyas in 1982 and is a former journalist awarded by the Brazilian government for his human rights activism. Bhaskar interviewed Osho 3 times for the Brazilian press and currently runs an Osho meditation center in Brazil. I'm so happy to have Bhaskar on the show and I hope you enjoyed. Bhaskar, welcome to the show. How are you?
Oh, thank you, Swaram. Just a pleasure for me. I'm doing very nice. It's a very beautiful day of Sunday while we are recording that, and I'm so happy to be with you.
Okay, to start, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
Yes. It's quite a funny story. There was no one book of Osho in Brazil at that time. I'm talking about 1981, 1980. So there was no book. Sometimes we received some 2 or 3 pages that someone who get a book of Osho in English and translates. And I was 22 years old. So, but some friends start to do some meditations. I already have been doing at this time some therapy, but I didn't know meditation and Osho was not there yet. And one day, as a journalist, I made some freelance doing some summaries of books for a very big library in Brazil, publisher. And then I went to this man to get the money. And this man was very well known that, I mean, he never paid. And I went there and I said, you know, the debts that he had with me. And he just gave the money. It was a surprise for me. And I really need that money, so I couldn't receive a note that day. And in his wall of this man on the library, there was something like 15 photos of Osho. I knew Osho, I mean, I knew something about Osho. But then I saw that these photos, and I asked him to give me one photo of that. But I was much more like joking, because he had so many photos. He gave the photo, he went to the wall, took the photo and gave it to me. So I went home and I put the photo there on the wall, but without any feeling about Osho. But in the next day, I was talking with a friend of mine, a restaurant, and suddenly came out of my mouth without thinking, I took sannyas. And I said that in a restaurant, nothing, I mean, I was not thinking about Osho, not talking about Osho. When I said that, for my surprise, because it just came out of my mouth, the image of that photo started to shine like in front of my eyes. And then I immediately went home. I put some red clothes because I knew already that about the red clothes. And I started to feel a very fresh moment, like when you fall in love, yeah? That everything's changed on your heart and so. And then I start to look to know something about Osho. In that moment, Osho was moving from Pune to Oregon, to Rajneeshpuram, United States. So when I came to know about Osho, he was moving. Then I stayed like 1 year having lots of dreams about the community in Rajneeshpuram. Lots of dreams. In that time, we didn't have internet and videos around and YouTube. So I didn't have any photograph or something of the new community in the United States. But I started to have many dreams. When I went there 1 year after, the community was absolutely the same that I could see in my dreams. But it was like that. Since the day I got that photo and I put on the wall, Osho is with me and Osho and his eyes is like 24 hours a day, like look at my eyes. I feel like that eyes on the photo never disappeared here in front of my eyes. So I went to Rajneeshpuram. I was a very young boy, like 24 at that time, 23 to 24. And I want to tell you some very funny story that maybe can be funny for you. For me, it was very nice. I was 23 years old. I had no money. Brazil was a very poor country at that time. So to go to United States to have 1 week of festival in Rajneeshpuram, it meant at that time something like $1,500. But $1,500 could be something like $10,000 now in Brazil. I mean, it was so much money in Brazil at that time. So I had an old car that I sell. I had a job that I dropped it just to receive the money that even got the job. And I started to sell my freezer, my clothes, and I sold everything. This was 1983. And then I was the most happy person in the world. I was going to see Osho. It was, I mean, nothing more was important before I saw that photo. And I took Sanders from a letter. So I had already my name, Devan Bas. That means divine sun god. And then I went to Rajneeshpuram. Osho was in silence. So on that day of July 1983, I was going to have my first silent darshan with Prabhupada. 20,000 people in the Buddha Hall. Osho came, sat down in silence. And for sure, my eyes was looking to see Osho. I was just there behind 20,000 people, far away from the chair, from Osho. But my eye was looking to see him, the curiosity to see him physically. And then in a moment, my eyes met Osho's eyes, very distant. But when I saw his eyes, it was like a very dark row with nobody inside, with nothing inside. I want to tell, I was very young. I have been reading very few things from Osho at that time. I didn't have so many theories about the ego, how the ego works. I was very young. I was just in love with that man. So at that time, I didn't know what really could mean to not find anyone behind that eyes. But somehow I can tell that it's like I was somehow looking for some personal connection, and there was no person behind that eyes. And then I start to cry. It was like 6:30 in the morning, first satsang. And I start to cry, and I start to enter in a very huge space of suffering, lots of pain. It was like all my lies start to emerge, to appear in front of me. I couldn't rationalize anything. And I start to suffer and see all the tricks out of the mind, of the ego. But as I said before, I didn't have any background, any psychological knowledge and things like that. So it was just fire. And during the whole week during the festival, people were dancing, having fun, having a lot of fun, and having music and having sex. And I was inside my tent. It was very hot. It was summer, July summer in the United States. And I used to come out of the tent to eat and to go again to the satsang. It was a whole week with a lot of pain, suffering. I didn't see any exit. I think that I never come so close to the possibility of committing suicide. Because that, I mean, I was just lost. So 1 week of the festival was like that. And I think that in this moment, I have received two kinds of divine grace, Osho's blessings. These blessings are first. After that, I never fear anymore to look inside. So I could see so much. I could suffer so much. I could experience so much pain about what I was seeing about myself that the fear of looking inside never appeared anymore. This is, for me, the greatest blessing. And the other thing is that I think that it was very normal if my mind, if my whole being after this experience of 1 week surfing, my mind could say, you know, you have to escape from this place. You have to escape from this man. This is just craziness. Yeah? How I come to a place to see a guru, a master, and I start to suffer. I was looking for ecstasy, for blessings and bliss. And this is a divine grace for me, because what happened out of my being was just the opposite. My conclusion was, wow, I have to come to this place. I have to come to this man. There is nothing more to do in this world. So the conclusion that my being had was the opposite of some rational conclusion. Yeah? And this is for me a grace. I mean, Osho didn't allow that the mind could interfere that moment and delete that meeting of my eyes and the no eyes of Osho. And so I have these two things like a grace in my life. So it was this 1 week. I came back to Brazil and I had to restart everything again after 1 week. So to make a house, to buy a fridge, to work, make money, one day to have a car again. And it was very nice because everything was burned. Money, this and that. So I came back to Brazil and it was something like 2 months more of huge process, deep process inside, you know, feeling bad, feeling like a piece of shit, you know, feeling as the worst person in the world. And I could say that after 2-3 months, meditating always, in that time we were much more like addicted to do dynamic meditation every day and Kundalini every day. So after 2 or 3 months, I start to reborn. Since that day to now, life just go on and I feel very blessed, very blessed. But this first moment, this first week, this first satsang, it was a very powerful shower of blessing in my life. So it was like this that I met Osho for the first time, Swaram.
So when you met Osho, you said that you were very young, but at the same time, I believe you were already by professional journalist. During the 2 years that you lived in the ranch, I understand that you interviewed Osho twice. Yes. I'd love to hear about the interviews, how they came about. But also, I'm curious to hear how was for you to interview your master and how was for you to be in front of Osho, trying to keep together your professionalism, your rational mind, being in the energy field of Osho.
The whole story goes like this. I was doing worship, work as a meditation, we used to call worship at that time, at Madalena's kitchen. And then suddenly on the mic, I heard this voice saying, Swami Bhaskar, Swami Bhaskar, please come to the desk. I saw that I could have been making something wrong, no? Because come to the desk. I saw that, wow, what's wrong thing I did? And it was a very nice guy called Osho Mali. He was from Argentina and he was one of the important person, let's say, on the press officer also. And then he had a very big envelope with many papers inside. There was my articles about Osho on the Brazilian press. And I remind you of that time, no internet, no emails, nothing like that. So this envelope full of paper with my articles. And Osho Mali asked to me, he said to me, your articles are very good. For how long are you here? And I said, well, for almost 1 year or 7 months or something. And then he said, why didn't you come to the press office? Just to show yourself. And I said, no, here I'm working in the kitchen, on the cleaning. I don't want to see any intellectual thing. I'm having fun working in the kitchen and so. And he said, yes, but you're going to make an interview with Osho next week. This whole week was mad because sometimes I was in ecstasy. Sometimes I was absolutely afraid like a child. There is this Latin American song that says, como un niño frente a Dios. That means, like a child going to be in front of God, like something like that. I was worried because if Osho started to talk with me, my English was very, very poor, much poorer than today. I was very nervous when I met in Somalia and he said, relax, Bhaskar. He's a man like any other man. He's not like a god, a special man. And I always remember I was looking to a Somalian in silence and said, what is this guy saying to me that the normal person, just an ordinary man? No, the whole idea of just an ordinary man was burned in that moment. I was going to see the most amazing man in this whole world and a very special man. So I went there, I went to the room where it's going to be the interview. I had my seat on the floor, put the mics and everything. And I was there with something like 20 people in the room. But outside, people were invited. And many of you that are listening to this conversation now know this image. People outside the building singing and dance while Osho comes. So I was there in the room. And then I start to listen to the music from outside and people clap. It means that Osho was coming. So in a few seconds, I was going to be 2 meters of distance of Osho for 2 hours talking to him. And the music was getting higher and higher, louder and louder, and the clapping. And I could feel that Osho was already inside the building. The music was coming close. And then Osho entered the room and Osho sitting in his chair. And he looked into my eyes, and for the first time, Osho says my name. Osho looked into my eyes and says, good Bhaskar. How can I express this? Like a kind of, how can I say, the energy who comes when your master look at you and say your name. That's like a glow of energy, of blessing. It's a kind of diksha, it's a kind of transference of energy, a Shakti Pati, as they say in India. In that moment, I think that I collapsed a little bit. I got a little bit drunk. And on the video, you can see that I make some noise, it seems like a little bit lost, full of emotion, and I mean, no mind, because you cannot define what is that that's just in front of you. You cannot define, it's not a man, it's not a woman, it's not God, you cannot define. So you get a little bit lost. But I had my questions. I prepared my questions. And that time, this is a very important contest because I decided to make journalistical questions, not questions from the disciple. The whole problem with the American government was already there. The whole situation in Rajneeshpuram was already very tense. In my first interview, Sheila was still there. Yeah? But the fight with the government, with the Antelope, with the neighbors, the whole process of homeless, this whole thing was already happening. The tension was there. And of course, that it was very important for people, in my case, in Brazil. We had something like 2,000 sannyasis in Brazil at that time. And lots of people knew about Osho and he was very famous in Brazil. It was very important in my feeling to give to the readers of my interview to Osho the right idea of why Osho was so persecuted by United States government. What was the problem? And this is the thing, because even now the Netflix doc didn't show. Yes? What was the problem? was to break the silence of the Sunday afternoon of 20 people, old people who live there, or what was the problem? And the problem was the Osho's vision about religion and politics. It was a very deep vision, a very provocative vision. So I made all my questions around these things that Osho was talking a lot, doing darshans and doing interviews, other interviews, because I think that it was very urgent for the whole world to know what was the Osho's vision that was creating the whole problem. So I didn't make any question about the relationship between master and disciple, or about my ego feelings and trips. My first question was like this. I look at Osho and said, Osho, Brazil is a very poor country. Brazil is the second country in the world on HIV records. At that time was like that. More than 50% of the population are under the poverty line. But for the other side, we have lots of religion, African religion, Catholic religion, evangelistic religion. And we have this expression that's very popular in Brazil, which says, God is Brazilian. Then I look at Osho and ask, do you think so? Do you think that God is Brazilian? And you all can imagine Osho answer. Osho talked for 1 hour about the whole creation of God, the whole work of the church, especially the Catholic Church, and the whole creation of this kind of God that we know and that loves the misery and that repress and judge and everything, you know. So Osho was made a very deep answer. And then I asked a few other things about the Third World War and things like this. So it was almost 2 hours. I was there for 2 hours in front of Osho, looking into his eyes. I was absolutely, I don't know, when I see the videos, when I appear, it's like I'm melting, I'm collapsing. I could manage to make 3, 4, 5 questions. I couldn't interrupt Osho like normal journalists. I mean, when Osho stopped, I made the second question and like that. I was in a very empty space. I could understand every word of Osho. I could listen. I could manage to make a question in the right moment to make it. But I was really in a very empty space. When the interview finished and I went home, it was inside there was this kind of emptiness. Even the some ego trip, like, wow, I made an interview with Osho, I'm gonna be the most famous sannyasi in Brazil. Even this kind of trip was not there. Nothing. Such a huge emptiness. But everything looked so much full of light. The objects inside the room, the sky, the stars. It was like if I could take 3, 4, 5 LSDs at the same time. I never did that, but I can imagine what it is to have 4 or 5 at the same time. Everything was shining. I mean, I could see the aura, the shining, the light that vibrates from the objects and from the plants, and for something like 40 minutes, everything was just bright. And then afterwards, I took a license for my group of worship, and I got the whole week free to type the interview. You can imagine nowadays that that time I had to type the 2 hours interview to send by mail to the newspaper, Correio Brasiliense, where I was going to publish the interview. And then, Swara, if you would like to interrupt, you can ask something. Otherwise, I'm gonna go to the second interview.
I had a question on Osho's attitude toward the press, but if you are happy to talk about the second interview, yeah, let's go, and then I'll ask you later.
Okay, just to complete, because it's very connected. What happened was like that 1.5 months after the interview, I was still walking in the kitchen, and I heard that voice on the mic again. Swami Bhaskar, please come to the desk. It was again Anshu Mali with a very big smile on the face. And he showed me my article, 2 full pages on the Brazilian press, with the title, with 2 lines, saying, God must to be Brazilian, unfortunately. It was a phrase from Ocean. And these 2 pages of the interview, great. It was amazing. But Anshu Mali also brought to me the reaction, because the same newspapers the next day made a full page with reactions from politicians, from priests. And Osho have seen the interview and the impact and the reaction of priests and politicians, and then asked Anshu Mali to bring me back because he wants to answer. He wants to answer the reply. No? So I went there again. When I entered for the interview, Osho again looked at my eyes and said, good Bhaskar. But that time, with a very nice smile, a smile of a child that had made a very big noise to the press in Brazil. He was happy. And the other thing that was powerful, it was when Osho started to talk about his hands, because one of the priests on the newspaper said that I doubt that this man, Bhagwan, had calluses in his hands. I wonder if he knows what is to work hard. And then Osho respond talking about his hands. And then he put his hand just in the middle between my eyes and his eyes and start to talk about his hand. Look at his own hands and moving the hands and saying beautiful thing about his hands. And in this moment, I bring in my heart and in my eyes as at one of the most lovely moments of a human being that I could see. When Osho was talking about the work that his hands do, it was very, very beautiful. So I publish again, and years after, I'm going to make a 3rd interview with Osho, but I think that's time to have your questions. So,
yes, I definitely want to hear about the 3rd interview, which I believe it might be the very last interview given by Osho, was just at the very end before he passed away. So definitely it's important and I want to hear about that. But perhaps it's a good time for me to ask you, what was Osho's attitude towards the press? Like, how did he handle all the negative reactions from the establishment?
Yes. Yeah, there are very different moments with the press. There are moments where Osho really talked so hard with the journalists. I remember Osho talking straight to the journalists. For example, there was a journalist once that asked Osho why there was almost no one, must be 5 or 10 black people in the commune. Huh? A journalist brought that, and also was very hard, not only on the answer, but on the mind of the journalist who was perceiving this, or was looking for this kind of sign on that could be a problem, or some kind of prejudice, or racism in the community. I remember this, that also was not only answering a question for a journalist, but he was hard with the man, and I mean, he put the person in a process. He was a master for this person. In a few other moments, but the most brilliant and lovely and also funny moments with the press, it was when Osho, when the journalists come with difficult questions and hard things and inquiries and so, and Osho start to put so much love on his voice, on his eyes, and saying the right answer, and whatever is the answer. But these moments when also put lots of love on the person of the journalist while he's answering difficult questions. And when you see the journalist who comes very, you know, arrogant sometimes and also start to melt these persons, and these guys have to make the questions they have, and they are critical questions, but they start to transform themselves, and they start also to look at Osho with love, and start to make the questions that they have on their notes almost with shame, because they are in front of a man that's not the man they were prepared for being with. I also remember a moment, it was 30 years ago, so maybe the memory is not perfect, but I also remember when he was in jail, we were in Rajneeshpuram, and we were for a few days without any news from Osho. And then one of these big television of the United States start to announce that in the program of the night, the main program of the night, they would have a direct interview with Osho. So in the community puts, everybody went to Rajneesh Mandir. We were like 4,000 or 5,000 people living there. The big screens are there, and we were going to see Osho for the first time after the prison. And then Osho comes to the screen in this, with this clothes of prisoner. It was already something between the shock and the wonder, because he was even more beautiful than when he was using that amazing clothes they used to use. And the journalist start to ask very stupid things like, if Osho think that we disciples would commit suicide while he was in prison, then Osho say that, no, that we are not Christians. This was the trauma of John, but we don't think that we know how to do it, to celebrate, to dance. And then the journalist asked again, but do you think that your disciples can make some attempts from embassies and this and that? And then Osho explained that no, that we were waiting for him to come back to go on living meditation and celebration. And then the journalist said, look at this. I made 2 or 3 questions talking about your disciples, and you answer, but you always say that you have not disciples, that you have friends. And then Osho say, yes, I have friends, but you said that the time on television is short, that I should give short answers, so I didn't lose time with this. But they are my friends, my fellow trips. And then the journalist said, oh, my friends never gave to me a Rolls Royce. So the journalist was so arrogant at this time, so he was preparing that questions to come to this moment. But with Osho, even in prison, this doesn't work. Osho look at this man and said, you have to complain with your friends, not with my friends. My friends like to play and give the Rolls Royce to me. So the anchor of the television interrupted the interview, called back the program, and in the next day, it was the first time that I saw some articles on the American press recognizing a Zen master, recognizing the answer of a master, because Osho destroyed the journalist at that time. So this is another behavior of Osho with the press. Even in the most difficult moments, like in prison in the United States, afterwards in Uruguay, when he was expelled from Uruguay, deported from Uruguay, Osho never gave interviews trying to arrange things and be sweet, and no, Osho always used the press, let's say like this, to be very, very clear in his message. Don't matter in which moment, in the moments of peace, in the moments of war, Osho was with the press always very clear about the issues, and also with that man or the woman who was there like a journalist. He always established their relationship, let's say, you know, some moment of personal relationship. Oh, these are some feelings or something that I saw with Osho. So if in some answer with the press. He was very hard against the American government, or against Jesus, or against Antelope, or against Ronald Reagan. It was his message. Through the press, and the Darshans, whatever. It was his message in all the times. So he never changed his message for sweet words, let's say like this, in the moments when he was facing difficulties. So he was always a master in all these moments. But I don't know, Swaran, if I really answer your questions or if you have another thing in mind when you talk about Osho in the press.
Well, actually, you took me by surprise. You know, the answer you gave, it's so beautiful, and it's almost a Zen answer in itself. You know, it really is beyond what I was expecting in my mind would be the usual answer. But actually, it's giving me a very beautiful perspective. And in fact, it's true. I remember watching those interviews with Osho where the journalists arise all tense and all angry, almost, some of them arrogant, and then slowly the energy changes so much, and some of them, they actually fall in love with Osho. There are some of those journalists that they would probably take sannyas if they had a bit more time to spend with Osho. So you put it into words what I've kind of sensed. So it's beautiful. And at the same time, he kept his message clear, but he was working also on the person in front of him. So very beautiful. Thank you so much, Bhaskar. That's amazing answer.
And so for people who maybe never saw these videos, I think there's something in YouTube. You have to look, yeah? Because it's beautiful. Because when Osho do this with the journalists, they come very hard like a rock. Then they start to flower. For us to see this video is one very beautiful experience, because you can see a human being flowering. It's a miracle. The rock becomes a flower just in 15 minutes of conversation with us. And it's beautiful. It's very beautiful to see.
Yeah, and that's a miracle. I mean, you said it. It's true. You know, to have such an impact on people is a miracle. That's a proof of a real master. So, okay, yes. I'd love to complete your story about the interviews, because there is a third interview. So can you talk us through that?
Yes. I was in São Paulo, that's the biggest city in Brazil, and I met one of the most important journalists at this moment, and he was editing a kind of special session on the most important newspaper of Brazil. The name is Folha de São Paulo. It's still the most important newspapers, even in this time when newspapers are not important anymore, but it still survived. And talking with this man about my life, he said, couldn't you make an interview with Osho for us? Now he's back in India. It is already 3 years after he came. He left the United States, and I said, no, Osho is not like that. I mean, that if I am there and I ask for an interview, maybe, but Osho is a little bit sick now. But I can try. I'm gonna send a letter to the press office. The newspaper was so important that I really had this motivation. And then I wrote to the press offices in Pune. And for my stupidity, I sent this letter by fax. I called that before, and then I sent by fax. And for my stupidity, I don't have the fax, and I don't have the answer they sent to me. But they agreed that I could send some 7 questions, and they could get the answer from Osho. So I sent the questions, and a few days after, I got these answers from Osho. So this interview is not on video. On my website, I have the interview. The interview must be the last interview of Osho, because it was September or beginning of October of 1989. Osho passed away in January of 1990. And the interview I like very much, because somehow I gave opportunity to worship, to come back to some issues of the interviews I made before, like, for example, AIDS AIDS. Because in the first interview I made, Osho have expressed his feelings and visions at that moment that the AIDS was something brought by the homosexuals and the homosexuality. In this third interview, but Osho explained very clearly that he is not a scientist, but what he could see in these years is that it's not like that, so with more knowledge about the virus and this and that. I also talk about the new commune and a few things. So in this last interview, somehow Osho summarizes his last feelings and opinions or visions about things like that, the new commune, AIDS, things like politicians and religion and this and that. So I could bring again something and I like very much, as I was not in front of Osho asking the question, the answer was going to come through fax. I feel there's some effort of Osho give short answers that summarize the whole issue.
Okay, well, thank you so much for giving us all this beautiful overview about your interviews with Osho. It's fascinating. And the last part of the interview, I'd like to talk about Osho in Brazil. I'm aware that Osho was very popular in Brazil at the time, and even today. I have a friend, Rashid, whom I interviewed in episode 2, who went to Brazil to help build a commune. I think the land was owned by Nivedano, and perhaps still is there. And I think in Alto Paraíso, there are lots of sannyasins and lots of things going on with Osho. And you yourself, you have a commune and a meditation center in Brazil. So give us a sense of what's going on with Osho in Brazil nowadays.
Well, the place where I live, where is my meditation center in this beautiful nature, is very close. It's in the same area of Nivedano's land. And where you were mentioning with Rashid. So here in this area, in the city called Alto Paraíso and other small villages around, there are many, many sannyasins of Osho living in the nature, many therapists and this and that. Osho in Brazil is a name. Everybody knows Osho. I do meditations and retreats with people who don't come from Osho, who come from other masters and other spiritual paths and this and that. But everybody knows Osho. Everybody has a lot of admiration or curiosity about Osho. I have a retreat called Beloved Osho in the month of March on this Enlightenment Day. And lots of people who wants to know Osho comes. After Netflix, it grew the selling of books and the curiosity of people about Osho. I think that even the people a little bit more closed after Netflix could see that there was something missing there in this documentary. This feeling is there. This is the magic of Osho again. This documentary comes, but what stays and is more curiosity about Osho, more clarity not clarity, but some suspicion on how he was persecuted over there in the United States. So Osho is a very respectful person, let's say like this. He's a respectful master in Brazil. The Facebooks and Instagrams are full of posts with Osho teachings, and he's very, very present. There are 3 or 4 very nice, big pages on Facebook with lots of translated videos. So Osho is very, very present in Brazil. Osho is in the heart of millions of people in Brazil. Everybody likes the meditations. Come to the retreats when I put some videos of Osho and I do the meditation. People just enjoy. People want more. After Netflix, I want to make a video with images that are here and there about the commune, about Rajneeshpuram. And then I went to YouTube to find things about Rajneeshpuram. And I only saw 4 or 5 very bad quality amateur movies. People, you know, some friends who made some videos and so. But that is nothing. That is nothing. So the effort of the Osho International Foundation to delete the times of the United States of the history, it looks like an effort to do this, because there is nothing. No? Even after Max Fritz was the time to show how was the commune. It was the biggest commune in terms of people living together with a master since Buddha. It's not a small thing. And I'm talking from a periodistic point of view. It's not a small thing. And it's funny because in the last moment, I think, in the Netflix doc, one of the last things is Sheila saying exactly this to the people in charge of Osho things nowadays. You know, don't try to forget what was Rajneeshpuram, because it was one of the most important, deep and beautiful experience of all spiritual masters on this planet, including the political war, including that, not putting this out, including this on the package. This is something that I really hope, that images and other things about how was life there in Rajneeshpuram, it could come out, because people are thirsty to know about this, because somehow it's what is missing today.
Yeah, no, totally resonates with me, and thank you for highlighting this, because I try to mention it as much as possible as well whenever I have an opportunity to remind people or to tell new people that Osho is the greatest master we had, and the impact he had was huge, you know, like so many thousands of people were around him, and miracles happen. You know, you guys went in the middle of a desert building a whole city. I mean, it's inimaginable anything like this or that scale or that impact today. I mean, there is nothing. There are, you know, few masters, beautiful people here and there. I'm not here to compare, but look at the impact they have on a large scale. What Osho did is unbelievable. So for me, it's an honor to be able to capture the story of people like you, because you were there, you're a protagonist, and also future generation are thirsty, will be thirsty, that they want to know. And here you are saying your story, you're saying things how they were and how they are. So that's amazing. Thank you. So we are running a little bit out of time, and I've got 3 final questions. So the first question is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
I have this podcast. It's only in Portuguese and Spanish. That's called O Sol, means the sun, where every day at 6 o'clock in the morning, Brazilian time, I put a new guided meditation every day. It's a 10 or 12 minutes guided meditation, only my voice and music. So what I do is I record the meditation in the day before. So I program the month the meditation enter on the podcast, and every day I wake up before 6, and then my own meditation is on the air, and it's great because at this time normally there is already something like 100 people waiting for the meditation of the day, and then I do the meditation with them, with the people, with my own voice guiding the meditation. So my day starts like that. I wake up before 6 to see if the meditation, it's okay on the podcast, if it's okay, and then I do the meditation. And then normally I go to my altar. I have an altar with a photo of Osho and with a photo of some other light beings that I like very much. And I have few moments on the altar that I use to ask. And here I come back for the first thing I said on this conversation. Every day I go to my altar and I ask that I never stop seeing. I only ask to worship my altar that he and all the light beings, keep myself seeing what has to be seen in myself, in within. Because I consider the most blissful, the biggest grace, let's say like this, to see. Every time I see something, I come more free about that feeling, that pattern, or that, you know, some blocked feeling or something. And every day I like to see, I ask to see, and then I have like my 15 minutes meditation, some 10 minutes in my altar, and then I go to my shower. And then, this is the beginning of the day. Yeah?
The second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
Well, we have to put the dynamic meditation aside to answer this question, because the dynamic meditation is something a bit crazy, because it's not that you really like to do, yeah? You know, wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, 5:30, to scream, to breathe that, in that way, yeah? It's not really something that you like, but after you do, you feel, why don't I do this every day? Because it's just gorgeous, it's just, you know, a resurrection of energy. And then the dynamic meditation is really something very, very, very special, yeah? But I like so much to do the Nada Brahma meditation, and I confess that sometimes I create some variations, bring the Nada Brahma meditation, the idea of the Nada Brahma meditation for some more huge movements, going to tantric movements. But the Nada Brahma itself, the way it is the one that I most practice. I like to do very much.
The last question is, you leave the Osho experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2020?
My God. It's so hard sometimes, because the beauty inside my heart, the beauty of his presence, is just amazing. But when I see the world, the outside world, and everything that's happening in many countries, with the human beings, the whole thing is the same. When you go to Osho's visions about how human beings organize themselves in the society, the political way, these things are the same and even worse as it was before. It's somehow sad to perceive that we are like before, like 2,000 years ago, like 30 years ago, also, like when was Jesus or Buddha. We are very few, the ones who are really able to surrender the dreams. And so we are very few. We are many beautiful people. Many beautiful people in a good state, yeah? But still, there are very few who receive the grace or who have the courage to make a big leap. Yeah? What's going on? But the society seems to be very poor. Mm-hmm. And so, on one side, I have this feeling of, you know, this desire of sharing and touching hearts, the people's hearts, to things that I know, that I learn, that I realize in myself, that makes life so much better. Yeah? Everybody's so occupied with surviving. Yeah? So this human drama is still there. So I feel like this. Sometimes it's hard to feel the possibility of light and see around people choosing darkness. So I got these both feelings. I cannot enjoy completely what I have been made by Osho, the life that I have, the capacity of love that I have, and that's the capacity of joy that I have. I cannot enjoy this completely, because there's so much darkness and then feelings of compassion and sadness are always visiting my heart.
Okay, well, Bhaskar, I really feel your heart. You're a really beautiful man, very loving man. And I feel your love for Osho, and that's so beautiful. So that's the end of this episode. And I thank you so much for sharing your story. It's amazing what you're doing, and you keep going, and you share Osho in Brazil. People who come across you are very lucky. Yeah, I hope to meet you in person one day.
Oh, me too, Swara. The love also is a very important tool for sharing this love. So I thank you very much. And I also think that everybody who receives your material also thanks you very much, because it's always a moment of fun and joy and some wonder about how people have different experience of, as we have. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Bhaskar. Lots of love and a big hug.
Thank you. See you soon.
Bye. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for listening to the Love Osho podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveosho.com for new episodes, blogs,
and much more.